Welcome to Harlow on Healthcare. I'm David Harlow, and I invite you to join me by my virtual hearth as I sit down with healthcare leaders to discuss building the future of healthcare. Today, my guest is Mirabel Kaebeling, Vice President of Clinical Operations for Virtual Health. Mirabel utilizes her care management and regulatory knowledge to guide the clinical aspects of the company's Helios care management platform, both by working on regulatory compliance and on optimizing the platform's clinical protocols and workflows, driving proactive care management for customers' patients, who number in the millions. Welcome, Mirabel, and thanks for joining us.
Hi, I'm happy to be joining you on this podcast.
Great. So for starters, I'd love to hear more about the product and the service that you provide, and a little bit more about the customers that you're serving and the patient populations that you're serving.
Yes. So for virtual health, we unite parties in healthcare by converting information into actionable insights through seamless data integration and intuitive workflows. Our vision as a company is to make healthcare proactive for every person through technology. With that said, our clients or the people that we work with are usually health plan or healthcare organizations, big or small, to help optimize their workflows, their processes, to support quality care delivery. Our platform is called Helios, and the platform is purpose built for supporting value based care.
My understanding is that one of the service lines, so to speak, of virtual health is built around social determinants of health. And so I'm interested to understand, you know, whether that's a service line or whether you're looking at a variety of different types of data and information around each particular patient in order to feed into the care management process. So I'm interested to understand the sources of data that feed into the social determinants of health process. And I imagine that that would include a variety of traditional healthcare data and maybe some non-traditional data streams as well.
Yes, that's correct. So for our platform for Helios, we can integrate with different types of data sources to make sure that we're gathering all the insights needed to help clinicians or providers or health plans make clinical decisions or non-clinical decisions to support a plan of care, for example, for a specific individual. Regarding non-traditional data streams related to social determinants of health, I think we can categorize them into three P's: passive, progressive, and predictive. For passive data, this is something that does not require any type of engagement from the member or the patient, which means teaching or training is no longer necessary. So you're trying to capture activity and movement, for example, and it's being captured real time. And for passive data, can be deployed in like public settings such as schools, arenas, malls to capture population-based metrics. So the second P would be progressive data, which includes experimental information to discover the unknown and unique characteristics. Because when it comes to SDOH, when we're asking questions that are personal in nature for the individual, when talking about meeting their social needs, they may decline to answer or choose not to answer or just say, I don't know. But we should also be capturing those responses, maybe in a form of assessment or somehow, so that we're gathering the data and we're seeing how we can go back and maybe answer, maybe go back and reword the question in a different time as we build trusting relationship with the individual and to get an answer. So I also want to mention about geospatial analysis or geomapping. It's not a new concept, but it has meaningful applications to healthcare processes, and it's still sparse, right? But it It provides visualization of real-time spatial data to identify hotspots, for example, for fresh food, transportation, and other community resources to provide valuable information to healthcare stakeholders, including to individuals, patients, and members. When we talk about progressive data, we also imagine it as something that's highly dynamic. And the last P that I mentioned, so I mentioned passive, progressive, is predictive. So predictive data, this one remains to be controversial because it incorporates highly personal data. And examples of predictive data streams include like the U.S. Census data, consumer data, and community rankings. So critical discussions are still ongoing today to solve for data de-identification, for privacy concerns, and policy framework. So when we combine all these three P's with advanced tools or technology, we create powerful insights and we enhance workflows, and we can come to a more tailored whole person care for the individual that is multidimensional, because we need to be creative when we're trying to creative and innovative when we're trying to close gaps in to meet social determinants of health needs.
Right. So let me dig a little bit deeper and try to understand a couple examples of data points or types of data that fall into each of these three categories. So for example, something that's related to an individual passively collected, are we talking about sort of activity tracker data, or are we talking about where somebody, you know, goes into or out of a particular location?
Yeah, so it can be data that's coming from also telehealth, and we can like from wearable devices.
Right. Okay.
Yep.
I'm curious to understand, when you're talking about access to fresh foods, are you tracking that? Is that sort of part of a geolocation tracking of an individual and overlaying that with existing information on maps, or what are you looking at?
It's more of the geomapping that's currently available. I think there are some online resources too that, for example, I think there's one that for Chicago, you can actually see certain hotspots for resources, and we can use that. And in the near future, we can layer that with other data that kind of track activity to see if, like I said, to see if it's being utilized by specific population near that area.
Okay. You have a live view, so to speak, of people's daily lives, not just an encounter at a healthcare provider, right?
Right, right.
Okay.
That is the vision.
And you touched on the issue of data privacy, and I'm wondering how to date you have dealt with that. How do you explain to members the data that you're collecting? How are you using it? Is that something that is questioned or challenged, or is this sort of accepted among the patient population that you're dealing with?
I don't think we have come to the point where it's fully accepted yet. As I mentioned, there are still critical discussions that are ongoing, because we want to make sure that we're HIPAA compliant, that we're following regulations, and at the same time we're able to share important or critical information to providers to truly understand and see the critical issues for a member when it comes to their social needs. And there are a lot of regulations too regarding sharing sensitive information related to behavioral health diagnoses. So it is, like I said, it is still an ongoing discussion from a regulatory perspective. But CMS does recognize that we have to work on trying to increase transparency when it comes to sharing health information.
Right. And from the whole HIPAA perspective, you stand as a business associate of a health plan or a health system in terms of how you access the data. Right. And so sort of tying this back to the conversation about how this helps the patient. You're pulling together all of this data. And then from a care management perspective, how do you tie it all together? How do you allow a care manager to visualize this? How does a care manager use all of this information in managing the care of an individual patient?
So when it comes to managing non-traditional data sources, when I was talking about those three pieces, more future state. We still have a lot of work to do to get to those. But to answer your question, as far as the care manager, would now have to the data is visible, now have to go through a clinical decision process and also build a good relationship with the individual with the patient's family as well, to be able to come together to work through a plan of care that will get the patient and the family members buy-in. Because it can be, from a care manager's perspective, for example, housing may be the top issue, like getting all the information that the care manager has and will make a determination. Well, I think housing is the main issue. But if from the individual's perspective, that's actually not their priority at this time, they're more concerned about access to food or something else. But it has to be an ongoing communication so that you can get the patient's buy-in to work through a treatment plan or a plan of care that they will follow and they will be engaged in closing the gaps for their social needs.
Right. So I've heard of some institutions that, for example, partner with other organizations that effectively will write a prescription for housing, write a prescription for food, mm-hmm. some of these social determinants. Do the care organizations or plans that you're partnering with do that sort of thing internally? Or do they typically partner with outside organizations, or is that something that you don't necessarily have visibility into yourself?
From a vendor perspective, we don't have that type of visibility on the partnership. But I do know that I do know of some examples of partnerships with, for example, UPMC. They have a partnership with Pennsylvania Department of Housing and Urban Development. So there's a lot of community partnership that are happening right now. And I think the WellCare has healthy rewards program where they incentivize positive behaviors towards preventative care. And then Humana's Bold Goal Project for 2020, they are targeting food insecurity, I think loneliness and social isolation at the community level. So so those are like current community partnerships with organizations and healthcare insurers that I know about.
Okay. And what your toolkit enables the care manager to do is to key people in better to these existing community resources, I imagine.
Yes. And making sure that for our platform, we can have those directories, like those provider directories in the platform. So it's easier for the care manager to access. You don't have to go to another website. To look for resources, but use the platform and then type, for example, the member's zip code and then see the resources that are available specific to food insecurity or housing, for example, and then be able to search that in the platform and share that information with their patient.
If you're just tuning in, this is Harlow on Healthcare, coming to you on Healthcare Now Radio. I'm David Harlow, and my guest today is Mirabel Cabling, Vice President of Clinical Operations for Virtual Health. So, Mirabel, let's talk a little bit about how your product, your platform, enables interdisciplinary collaboration in the care for an individual patient. We've been focusing on social determinants, but you had mentioned behavioral health. There are other aspects of the broad care journey of any individual patient that you're platform enables better management, right? So mm-hmm. I'm thinking about sort of what are the other disciplines that become involved here, and what sorts of resources are out there that can be inventoried and activated using the tools that you provide?
So because we need holistic solutions to close gaps of care and social determinants, collaborative work between, for example, nurses, social workers, community resources, and other agencies are necessary, because social determinant issues are more complex and are typically hidden in layers. So what we can support for our platform is to be able to be that hub for the communication between those different types of interdisciplinary teams. So to work through, whether it's investigative work for the care manager or social worker, or documenting their telephonic or face-to-face interaction, it would be a place to gather all that data, so that and to include the patient and their family members, to gather all those data and document it, and then develop really personalized plan of care for the individual.
Mm-hmm. And you're activating and empowering different sorts of providers. Who uses this tool? Is it people across the range of different provider types, or focused on care management?
So we have different, we call it user experience, or you can think of it as portals, as well. So we have, there's a care management portal, there's an admin portal, there's also a provider portal for those providers. They have their own instance, and I think we also have, I mentioned a few more, but those different portals are unique, but based on the role that they play on the members' care, they have the tools that they need to either document an assessment or review healthcare information and make some recommendation, and they have their own place to do that, and it all it's an obvious and interoperable, and the sharing is optimized because they're all they can share the information in a safe environment. We also have a member portal, so if plan chooses to give the member a portal to see their assessments, to answer their own assessments at their own pace, or to communicate with their care managers or providers, they can use that as well. We can also share educational materials like videos or letters through their own member portal as well.
Okay. And do you have a sense of the uptake of those tools by patients? Assuming it's provided by a health plan or a health system, do most patients avail themselves of those tools, or is that early days, early stages, limited access at this point in the time?
At this point, it's on the early stages, because there are health plans and providers that have their own member portals as well, but it is available.
Right. And it sounds like it is being used by providers to collaborate with each other, so they can see each other's interactions or notes or recommendations, perhaps in a way that is not possible using a traditional electronic health record.
Yes, and it can efficiently and timely, it can be a more time, because it is cloud-based as well. So it's just the information sharing will be faster. I feel like if the providers are utilizing the system and communicating with the care managers or the members.
Right. So is there a standard approach to the way a care manager might use your toolkit, or does it vary widely across different implementations?
There are some similarities, but it does vary, because it varies dependent on the type of population they serve. So we have Medicare eligible patients, and we have Medicaid members who have high needs and are very sick, right? So depending on the characteristics of the population they serve, and also their model of care, of how they perform care management, they can use the system differently. But there are some key pieces of care management that is universal. For example, like creating assessments, doing assessments, creating care plans. But as far as connecting those into workflows, you'll see different varieties of how the system is being used in different markets, different states, and different types of businesses, line of businesses.
I think you said earlier that many, if not most, of your clients are using this in the context of value-based care arrangements. Is that correct, or is this
yes.
also something that can be used in a fee-for-service world?
I think it can be used for a fee-for-service, but we are purpose-built for value-based care because we do want to make sure that that we're those with the data that we gather and the workflow that we support, we're really optimizing quality care delivery. So that's why we're towards more supportive of value-based care.
Sure. Can you give us a sense of the scope of the work that you're doing? I think that you've said that your platform is serving millions of patients. So what does that mean in terms of geographic distribution and adoption and sort of number of plans or health systems? Is that something you're able to shed a little more light on?
Yes. Yeah, so right now, from what I know, we're serving about 8 million lives in at least 26 different states.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And for as far as populations, we do have Medicare patients, Medicaid. I think we have duals as well, and populations that's needing complex care management.
And have you or any of your partners engaged in any sort of research? Based on the experience of using this platform, can we tie this? I mean, it makes sense. It sounds sensible to me. Can we tie this to improved outcomes, clinical outcomes, lower costs, et cetera?
Oh, absolutely. I think we do have data science is a big, is also a part of what we do here in virtual health. So we are working towards developing those metrics and seeing those metrics so we can tie them directly to seeing improvement in quality of care delivery, whether that is seen through lower readmission rates, for example, for a population, or better outcomes for example, graduating from one plan to another because all the goals or the healthcare goals have been achieved and things like that. But we're in data gathering and analyzing stage of that process.
Okay, sounds good. Well, to wrap things up, Maribel, let me ask you my final question, which is this. If you were to wake up tomorrow and find yourself 5 years in the future, what's one thing in healthcare that you would hope or expect to be drastically changed?
My hope is a transition to a paperless documentation system for clinical and non-clinical information to improve healthcare data gathering and sharing. It's hard to move towards interoperability of healthcare data if we're not paperless. And we do need interoperability because it impacts patient access to information. And we know that informed patients tend to play a more active role in their healthcare. So I'd like to imagine real-time healthcare data sharing to inform healthcare decisions in varying aspects of care, whether it's diagnostic, preventative, or curative. I know that's a big ask, but just to answer your question, that's a dream of mine.
Okay. I think it's an even bigger ask given the field of play that you're involved in, where you're talking about social determinants that may not be
yes.
digitized at all, right, in an organized fashion. So
yes.
that adds correct. Another layer of complexity to your wish list
yes.
there. Yeah.
Because we still have smaller agencies that work through paper referrals and documenting things by hand. And yes, they're still allowed.
Right. Okay. Well, stay tuned. Thank you very much. Thanks for joining us today. You have been listening to Harlow on Healthcare. Join us at healthcarenowradio.com. Let's continue the conversation on building the future of healthcare together at #HarlowOnHC. I'm David Harlow, keeping the fire going and holding a seat open for you. Until next time.